You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation, and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island, to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and graphic discussion of deaths in custody and also the material about the torture and starvation of asylum seekers and refugees. On today's show, we will first bring you an interview with Ian Rintel from the Refugee Action Coalition about Nauru refugees and asylum seekers facing a humanitarian crisis as food crisis worsens after Nauru power blackouts. Then we will have our regular update with Brett Collins from Justice Action about prisoner rights and the campaign to have computers in cells for people in prison. And this is Marissa, and I'll be taking you through until 5 o'clock this evening. Food crisis worsens after Nauru power blackouts. Instead of following Pauline Hanson with even more divisive anti-immigrant and anti-refugee policies, Tony Burke and Labor could use the millions being wasted on offshore detention to improve the lives of asylum seekers and address the cost of living crisis. The starvation rations and the miserable conditions are a deliberate part of Australian policy to deter people from seeking asylum and trying to force asylum seekers to return to their home countries. Nauru officials are now threatening asylum seekers with forcible removal to their home countries. And I'm going to be speaking with Ian very shortly. I'm delighted to welcome him to the program to speak about the use of human rights, like the abuse of human rights will only end when Nauru is closed and all asylum seekers and refugees are brought to Australia. Hello, Ian. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Marissa. Yeah, good to be here.
Lovely to have you. I felt like I really need to really make it very clear to listeners about what's going on. Would you be able to just talk about some background about what's happening?
Yeah, no, sure. Look, there's about 105 people who were asylum seekers trying to get to Australia that then Australia has forcibly taken to Nauru, and that's the biggest group of people that are suffering on Nauru at the moment. There's another smaller group of people, now 13, who are the NZYQ cohort. They're the people that, again, which after introducing deportation laws very similar to Trump's deportation laws, they've at the end of last year, the Labor government has got 13 of those people, successfully deported to Nauru. So there's two groupings of people, but they face the same overall circumstances, on Nauru, and that's got worse and worse. They get a very small allowance. They're not allowed to work, and what that means is that with the cost of living crisis on Nauru, and the fact that in the last month or so no ships have been able to land on Nauru, that's not clear whether there's problems with the port or the weather. But there's no rice and no flour, on Nauru at the moment. The cost of other things are beyond the, beyond the pale. So that's already meant that many of the people there were already living on, two meals and some only one meal a day. They simply can't afford to buy the food, to eat properly. And now with the blackouts that are happening, and particularly in the Budapest camp, where they've become very frequent. Any food that they've got in the fridge is spoiling. They can't afford to replace it. The government's not offering to replace it. And on top of that, there's plenty of rain at the moment, but there's also a water crisis because the water is not properly it's not looked after. It's water that comes off the roof. The camps are very close to phosphate mining, so there's phosphate residues as well as dead lizards and flies and other insects and things. So the water that comes out of the tanks is yellowish brown, and many of them got stomach upset. So you get the idea. There's a very, very difficult circumstances that they've created in the same way we've seen it, the long history now of creating intolerable conditions in detention, and then come the threats about, not things aren't going to get any better. You're going to have to return home. If you don't return home voluntarily, we'll forcibly remove you.
That's an absolute atrocity, really, isn't it? And so the refugees and asylum seekers, where are they from?
A lot of them are Pakistan and Bangladesh, but they're also Chinese, a couple of Vietnamese, but they're mostly Bangladesh and Pakistan.
And has the ombudsman been contacted?
No, look, it's one of the things which is difficult because the government says that the Nauru now has total control, so it's not really an Australian issue. They've signed various agreements to make it, well, to try and distance themselves, But we've had a couple of to distance the Australian government from the conditions that are being inflicted, on Nauru. But we had there's a very good win in the court, last week, where the actual, Supreme Court actually found, federal court. Ordered the Australian government to tell the Nauru government to provide medical records for one of the people who had been, deported there. So the courts have actually accepted that there's a higher degree of responsibility between Australia and Nauru than what the government faces up to. So the short answer is no. We've been agitating for the UNHCR who would normally visit or routinely visit or to attempt to visit detention centres in Australia. They've not yet been to the Nauru facilities. There's no oversight. That's what it amounts to. There's no oversight.
So, isn't Australia paying for the offshore processing over there?
They are indeed, the food? Hundreds of millions of dollars.
The food as well?
Yes, well, the money they're paying is going straight to the MTC, the American company, that's meant to be providing the allowances for them to get the food. They don't provide the food, they just give them an allowance and then they have to buy the food. That's one of the problems because the money, as I said, the money they get is not enough to actually buy the food that is in the shops. The prices are exorbitant. They're extraordinary because so much of it, there's nothing growing on the Nauru. All of it's imported, but it does mean you can have situations where tomatoes are like $11 a kilo. Sometimes the lettuce is $9. Milk is like $6 a litre. It's impossible for them to survive on what they're getting, and particularly when you take away money for phone calls. They're actually being told they're going to have to pay if the water runs out. They're going to have to pay to get their tanks refilled if they do run out of water. It just means they're desperately short of everything, and we're starting to see the health problems. When already the heat and the water, you're starting to see a long list of stomach upsets, kidney stones, all the kinds of things that Nauru was notorious for, in the years gone past, are now simply being repeated.
So these asylum seekers and refugees have been allowed to rot on Nauru rather than getting them to Australia where it's safe.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the longest ones, most of the asylum seekers have been there 2.5 years now, going on 3 years, and the hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent to do that. They could have been in Australia, had their you know, claims assessed while they lived in the community in Australia. We're not just talking the money saving, you know, we're talking about the actual, you know, the lives, the fact that people could be safe in Australia, not face these, you know, their human rights abuse or the terrible conditions that they're facing, you know, on Nauru. But I mean, that's the point. The government is spending hundreds of millions of dollars. They're really playing into, you know, Pauline Hanson's hands in that respect. And we're very concerned that any announcement that Tony Burke is about to make, we're going to see further attacks on asylum seekers' rights.
And if One Nation does get in, there's going to be even more attack on asylum seeker rights, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly the point. It's a point we made when they put through the anti-deportation laws, sorry, the pro-deportation laws at the end of last year. Right, it's one thing to say, oh, you know, Labor's got no intention of using it against every, you know, person on a bridging visa in Australia, but actually the law would allow a One Nation government to use that deportation law against anybody that was on a bridging visa, you know, in Australia. So they're playing a very, very dangerous game, and they have to take a lot of responsibility for not standing up for the kind of, you know, anti-migrant and anti-refugee policies and, you know, the various utterings that come from Hanson and One Nation. They've allowed, I think, to, you know, that the idea that you know, refugees and migrants are a problem, when, you know, the problem is the racism, the problem is the system that doesn't uphold their human rights.
Yeah, I find it really interesting, and I actually wanted to make an announcement on air, because I feel that, you know, it's quite disgusting the way these anti-migrant Australia First parties have been sending hate email to some radio broadcasters at 3CR, and I find that actually quite deplorable.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's disgraceful, but it's, you know, that's a situation I think that the Labor Party has to take some responsibility for, you know, creating.
Creating the opposite. Exactly.
It's 2022, and they could have had a long campaign against the racism, carrying, you know, supporting pro-migrant, pro-refugee policies, but they've really given too much latitude to those kinds of ideas. And in
too
Victoria,
much.
You're facing a, you know, it's disgraceful watching the way in which One Nation's, you know, benefiting from Labor's failures in Victoria.
And the crisis also affects the 12 refugees who have been deported from Australia to Nauru under draconian legislation introduced by the Labor government in 2025. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. No, that's what I said in the beginning. There's now 13 of those people who have been, you know, quite deliberately deported, to Nauru. And that in itself, in our opinion, is just a violation of the it's simply indefinite detention by the back door. Once the High Court had ruled against indefinite detention and many people were rightfully released from immigration detention in Australia, they've now got this, you know, draconian piece of Trump deportation law, which so far has seen 13 people, you know, sent to Nauru, and they face, you know, similar living conditions to the ones that we're just talking about. Their allowance is the same, the water's the same, the blackouts haven't been quite as bad in the camp that where they are, but they still have those blackouts affect what they can do. We've seen people who, one guy in a wheelchair was actually sent to Nauru. We've got someone there that the court actually said, sending this person to Nauru may well shorten their life, but they've sent him, you know, anyway, with no proper medical facilities, recognising that his severe asthma can't be properly treated or managed, you know, on Nauru, and he may well die on Nauru as a consequence of being sent there. So, you know, the anti-deportation laws are exactly the kinds of things which Hanson is actually talking about. You know, we don't want these people here, and the Labor Party has given them a law that would allow them to deport people, as they have done with the 13. There are around maybe 280 others that are being held at the moment in Australian immigration detention centres because we've got other legal processes that at the moment are preventing the government, you know, to send them to Nauru. But once those legal processes run out, if we're not successful, then we'll see those numbers slowly, you know, slowly creep up. So it's 13 at the moment, but they could easily be 300. And again, we'll see hundreds of millions of dollars that are going into the hands of the MTC, not into for the Nauruan people, not in for the asylum seekers, but we're seeing, you know, corporations grow rich and the Nauruan elites, you know, growing rich. When we face such a cost of living crisis, and in Australia, that money could be alleviating.
Absolutely, it's a really disgusting process, and let's watch this space. Thank you so much, Ian, for coming onto the program.
Okay, Marissa, thanks for having me.
Lovely to have you. Bye bye.
Okay, bye.
Take care. And that was Ian Rintel from the Refugee Action Coalition speaking about the humanitarian crisis on Nauru, which is the result of Labor's commitment to offshore detention.
We have got something very special. Yeah, up at Camp Sovereignty, Grandmother Moon, Full Moon, at end of the month. Camp Sovereignty presents Rock Against Racism. Remember the Rock Against Racism back in the day? Yeah, so from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m, Sunday the 30th of August, at Camp Sovereignty, Linlithgow Avenue, not the King's Domain, Melbourne. Rock Against Racism is a free concert held in honour of all those ready to stand strong against the racist attack on the camp. Come dance and spread the love, hey? Rock Against Racism, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the 30th of August, Grandmother Moon Night at Camp Sovereignty.
A 3CR supporter.
And you're back with the Do and Time show. In case you've just tuned in, this is 3CR Community Radio. And we're going to be speaking very shortly with Brett Collins from Justice Action. Justice Action is a non-profit community organisation that advocates for the rights of prisoners and involuntary mental health patients. Founded in 1979, the organisation has had considerable impact on the development of Australian criminal justice policy. Their work led to the development of the Prisoners Legal Service, 1979, and the Australian Prisoners Union in 1999. The group provides representation to people locked up in prisons and hospitals with an emphasis on cases that deal with abuses of power and the human rights of incarcerated people. I'd like to welcome Brett Collins to the program to talk about Computers in Cells, an ongoing campaign for prisoners. Hello, Brett. Welcome.
Yes, good afternoon, Marissa. That's certainly quite a build-up. Thank you.
Absolutely. You've got to have your plug. I mean, listen, you're a former inmate. You helped people in prison. Now you've got out, you know, decade, and you've been helping prisoners for decades. You deserve
it. That's right. Yeah, well, 10 years in, and then some have seen, 1980, so that's about, 40-odd years.
Oh,
okay, that's
wow.
A few years.
So
but it's
happening.
My community, so, you know, it feels good to do my best there. I just should, by the way, say quite carefully that we try to avoid too many cases. So if people think, great, Justice Action's in, we can do cases. We pick and choose special cases which highlight like a policy change of some sort. So that's really just to make people don't have any misunderstanding, because we are all voluntary, and that's limited. Yeah, limited. But we keep it edgy. That's the important thing. We stay right up the front, yeah. and whenever I'm trying to push something, I always think of myself in a cell with the bars up there and the door banging behind me and saying quite carefully from inside the cell as hard as I can, and our job really is to transfer the voices from outside, like mine and others speaking, and to inside, so we really to have people speaking in the way they should, speaking directly for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So you, Justice Action has been campaigning for prisoners' rights for computers in cells. Has there been a redevelopment, and can you talk a little bit about what led up to it and what is going to happen next?
Look, absolutely. Look, this is it recognises a game changer. So what we're really talking about is actually people, although they're physically isolated, they're sitting in a cell and locked away in some dungeon, they still have the entitlement, a whole lot of rights. the rights of expression, the rights of writing, right, talking, rights of a whole lot of stuff on there, and some and legal rights, serious legal rights. So the only thing is that there's a mechanical issue. How can they get that expression out? And that ability to use technology, right, to have their voices out there, to have their expression, is that's what it's about, and that's what our work has been for the last 25 years or so. It's focusing on the use of technology in corrections. So where we are currently is that it's situations which were previously were possible, where people were able to have correspondence courses in their cell. They could write letters back to people and back to universities, back to colleges and do courses. Those things are totally now out. And so everyone is expected to be up on the internet and access to websites and get access to information. So that's the way it's done. So it means people inside in detention are excluded from a whole range of different things, apart from also not getting access to the skills to be able to use those things. So our job is really to drive through access to telecommunications. So we probably the most important work we've done recently is to be in Nairobi in Kenya in 2023, and we then got the Nairobi Declaration for Detainee Telecommunications Rights. We got that through an international conference. We got agreement to do it, and we've been presenting that up at the World Crime Congress and really widely. And so it's a declaration for the entitlements of people in their cells, right, to have a whole range of things. And there's sort of five clauses about the things that they have entitlement to, which are quite significant.
That's really important, isn't it? So what does that mean then, that people in prison can access educational programs through using computers?
Oh, if only that were the case. I mean, look, we are struggling constantly. Like we have succeeded in two world firsts, acknowledged world firsts. One is to have the website iexpress.org.au, which is a website where people can actually get their own profile up. So even though they're sitting in a cell and been accused of some horrible thing, they can express themselves as they see themselves, and they can do here I am and I am, and they can actually get other people writing to them on the basis of what's actually on their personal profile. So that was a world first. And also from there, we had access to emails to be sending in and out emails, which was ran for 7 years. And so it's quite significant, but it became very expensive as well. And so now we're reworking that and making it in some sort of form so it can be sustainable. But that's all that really is, to make sure that people have access to the internet, even if it's a bit restricted and costly and a whole lot of things. But what we were really doing was making sure that legally the entitlement to be up there was acknowledged, and we could force it in, which we did. And so we defended the right of people to be up on iExpress under a lot of attack. And then what we succeeded in New South Wales was to get it to every person in prison, every person in New South Wales, access to a computer, tablet in their cells, which they can use for a phone call and can have access to some information through them. But it's limited at the moment, and we're fighting all the time, like today, even today, in Parliament, to have it extended to include things like, most importantly, things like access to counselling from external services and access to all those things. So that's really what we're battling for now. And we have immense support, international support, for the work we're doing. Really, really are, and we're starting to build up support, and people seeing it as achievable.
So the recent project of Justice Action with the iExpress website, it was launched in 2013, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yes.
So you're saying that iExpress provides prisoners and people in hospitals with a platform to generate a personalised web page, allowing them to share sentiments in much the same way that Facebook does?
Yes, exactly. In fact, it was called Facebook for Crims. But we've just rebadged it a little bit and just tidying it up, so we're going to open it up again and make it bigger. We also, like, we're just at the point of starting to get the Australian Prisoners Union moving as well. So both those things.
Tell us about that. Tell us about the Prisoners Union.
Well, look, the Prisoners Union has been in place since 1999, but we've been really keen to make sure that it goes back into people who are actually in prison. So they're the ones who are the, you know, the union. That's the body of the union. So we're talking now about, you know, 48,000 people sitting at the moment across all states and territories who are in there, and they will have an ownership. At the moment, it's not being functional because we want to make sure that we can maintain it, we can give it services, we can ensure that the voices of people in prison are then heard at the international level, at the national level. A whole range of current forums are available for them. It's only a question of the mechanics of actually getting those voices out. So at the moment, it'll be probably almost certainly running through families to get those voices out. But we're working it through. We want to make sure that it's really going to be robust, that it's not going to be dragged down, that we have people who are representative prisoners who are currently, you know, in parts of committees and things like that already in the prisons, that those people can then link into the Australian Prisoners Union and make a network that comes together as a national presentation. And that's really what it's about. We've just only today actually we had someone play an anthem, which I'd love to play. It's based on AC/DC, and it's actually special.
Where is it?
Very strong. I'd almost like to play it. I should maybe next week.
Could we?
Well, yeah, oh, absolutely. It's still in form, but I'll tell you what, it's exciting. It really is.
Why not? Let's arrange it.
Yeah, it's good. But so they're the sort of things we're doing, and so the nice thing, the important thing is we've got a, you know, there's 48,000 strong people sitting inside the prisons at the moment, yeah, without an expression, and that's our heartland. That's, you know, they're the people we're going to release. I release, you know, make sure their voices are out there and they have an expression, and also, you know, they can use their time properly. So it's outrageous there are restrictions. See, one thing we did achieve, and we've got a team of people working on this at the moment, but we're issuing a media release, working with the Community Justice Coalition, sort of like an older family member. Yeah. So we've just finished a consultation report, which has brought together all these international figures, and are now presenting the importance and the stability and the safety and how vital technology in corrections is, technology in prison. So I love this final statement. This is a statement from this guy. His name is Stephen van der Steen. He's actually on the International Corrections and Prisoners Association board, which is the peak body, and he's one of the three writers for the United Nations Red Cross Handbook on technology in prisons. This is what he says at the end. He said, I strongly believe that we should commit more firmly to this vision, a modern prison system that respects human dignity, leverages technology, and returns the citizens home ready to participate and contribute to this new digital society rather than repeating mistakes. The future of public safety depends on it. Isn't that strong?
Hello.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So there we are. So that's it. And, you know, he makes another statement. He said, the evidence is clear and the tools are ready. Secure digital inclusion in prisons works to build safer communities. What is lacking is political will and leadership. Isn't that nice?
Who was that? Can you clarify?
The man's name is Stephen van der Steen. He's one of the three writers for the United Nations Red Cross Handbook on technology in prisons. And it's a very strong statement, and it's part of, look, we'll be issuing a media release in the next day or two.
Fantastic.
Around statements of his. And also another one of the writers and some very significant distributors of technology for prisons. And what they all say, it comes down to the governments themselves allowing mainstream services to access people in prison in their cells. So the first time people can access then education themselves, for heaven's sake. How dare they take away education and not allow people access to the education services that are outside? How could they prevent people having access to the law to understand, you know, what is the act that affects me? How can I defend myself? And even to religion, some people, you know, it's really important. That's their life. How could they possibly prevent someone from seeing their own part or up there in their cell, on their computer tablet, and interacting with them and feeling the embrace of the community outside? These are things that
exactly.
are going to happen.
So you're going to be sending a media release about the Red Cross? The UN?
Yes, it'll be released about the consultation report, and that'll be coming out. We'll put it probably in a day or 2 days, just getting it now okayed, and so it'll be quite significant, and it'll drive all around Australia. It's going to go. It'll be a broad statement, which includes those which I've just read out to you now. But they're very strong, very robust, and there's no question we're going to win. Yeah, we will win this for sure.
Absolutely, because, I mean, the consultation report will be far-reaching, won't it?
Yes, that's right. Well, the consultation report lays a very strong basis for people to say, look, how can you prevent access to the services which will prevent people from going out and doing the same things as they did before. Now, if you got rehabilitation services outside, you've got counselling outside, you've got people learning new skills and learning how to deal with the temptations and to feel positive and have access to a job. No housing. It makes all the difference. No,
exactly. Because I mean, obviously, are you talking? Because obviously, Justice Action is in New South Wales, but you're helping the whole of Australia.
We're talking right across Australia, so we're presenting at every level in same Victoria. We're presenting at the level of the Minister for Corrections, Shadow Minister, Green Spokesperson, Commissioner, and also in Youth Justice as well. So we go into each one of those areas, and we present in the consultation report, and also saying, now, in your state and in Victoria, right, the domestic violence level is, and we have, the statistics are there, and we're using them. So we're saying you have no choice but to ensure that, and there are about 30% of people sitting on remand at the moment in every state and territory, 30% on remand for domestic violence offences. And they are not offering the services that will allow people to go back into their families and behave better, learn new skills, and also all the others, not just people accused of domestic violence offences, but also everyone. Mm. They go back to their families, and most of them males, and next moment they find they have to deal with families who haven't been respectful in different sorts of ways, and they have to have the skills and feel confident without being embroiled in more disastrous activities. We can avoid that. Yep.
Absolutely. Well, look, I'll be looking out for that media release. Hopefully, you and I can have a yarn about that pretty soon.
Beautiful.
And you can come back on for a follow up, because it's obviously going international now.
Yes, absolutely. No, we've been pumping it out, we're on a winner. It's there's resistance, but it's not worth having a fight unless you have some resistance.
Exactly. Brett, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Are there any other final comments you wanted to make?
That's lovely, Roy. So very, very pleased to be engaged, and very pleased to be 3CR doing a wonderful job.
Thanks so much, and thanks for your donation, Brett.
Okay. Bye-bye.
For Radiothon. Bye-bye. And that was Brett Collins from Justice Action speaking about computers in cells and looking at a far-reaching consultation report that's going to be coming out pretty soon to do with the UN and all of these issues going international, which is pretty important.
Join the Homeless Persons Union Victoria on our new radio show on the mighty 3CR.
Listen in as we embark on a public experiment to grow a homelessness union from the grassroots and on the radio.
Tuned In, Locked Out is a new monthly show on 3CR that seeks to grow a homelessness union in public view and to a wide audience.
We'll speak to people involved in community development, to allies, activists, and anyone who has anything interesting to say about homelessness issues in Melbourne today. Most importantly, we will centre the voices of people who are homeless in Melbourne and beyond.
Featuring interviews, guests, as well as analysis of policy, laws and media discourse that affect the homeless community.
Tune in on 3CR 855 AM on Tuesday, September the 8th, 12 AM to 1 AM for our premier broadcast.
Tuned In, Locked Out is a proud affiliate show of 3CR.
Every day, people in prisons across Australia are subjected to strip searching.
It is an unnecessary, degrading, and deeply harmful practice that must end. It involves a person literally being stripped of their dignity, forced to remove their clothing for their bodies to be inspected by prison guards, being forced to submit to humiliating requests like bending, squatting, and spreading their legs. In many prisons, people are subjected to this repeatedly and routinely. Children as young as 10 years old are being forced to remove their clothes and have their bodies inspected by adults. We're calling on the federal government to stop state-sanctioned violence by ending the routine, unregulated use of strip searching in prisons across Australia. Go to endstripsearching.com. Together, we can demand a system that upholds dignity, safety, and human rights. Fig Jam is a 3CR supporter.
And you're listening to the Doing Time Show, the Doing Time Show 3CR Community Radio. And we just had two interviews with Ian Rintel from the Refugee Action Collective and Brett Collins from Justice Action. And following on now, it's approximately 4:35, I'm going to be reading out a really important article from the Human Rights Law Centre. And I'm more than likely going to be interviewing somebody next week about this topic. And often it's always good to read out statements and media releases on the show. We just spoke with Brett Collins, who was talking about computers in cells with prisoners, and people in prison are not able to get access to educational programs on the computer, and often they wouldn't be able to keep up with all the news and alternative media. We don't even know whether they've got radios in there. Sometimes what happens is that inmates may get a radio and, you know, the screws pull it apart and then it breaks. So I think, as Brett was saying, prisoners are pretty physically isolated. More chance of actually having a transistor radio than computers. So I'm going to be actually reading out an article entitled Cook Government's Anti-Processed Bills Raise Constitutional Concerns and Will Stifle Peaceful Protest. That's actually the title of the media release. The Human Rights Law Centre opposes the Cook government's moves to enact some of the most restrictive anti-protest laws in Australia and has written to the Western Australian Attorney General, Dr. Tony Butti, MLA, to raise constitutional issues. The Public Order Legislation Amendment Bill 2026, WA, the Public Order Bill, and the Land Forces Event Special Powers Bill 2026, the Land Forces Bill, are currently before the Parliament of Western Australia. The Centre's letter to Attorney General Butti raises concerns that a number of provisions in the bills are vulnerable to constitutional challenge for intermissibly burdening the implied freedom of political communication. The Land Forces Bill, set to be debated in the WA Upper House on Thursday, will provide police extraordinary powers to use against protesters in the area surrounding the Land Forces Defence and Weapons Expo in October. These include the power to set up checkpoints, conduct searches without cause, confiscate items associated with peaceful protest, and demand identity documents. These measures combined would have a chilling effect and are likely to deter peaceful protest. The Public Order Bill would make the WA permit system one of the most restrictive in the country, allowing WA police to deny a protest permit on vague and broad grounds and create a new offence in relation to face coverings. The constitutional implied freedom of political communication requires that laws preventing or deterring political communication be justified and proportionate to achieve a legitimate objective. The laws are also at odds with Australia's international human rights law obligations, which require that laws limiting the rights to peaceful assembly and freedom of expression be justified and proportionate. The Centre opposes these bills and calls on the Cook government to protect peaceful protest and uphold human rights. Quotes attributable to Sarah Shorts, Legal Director at Human Rights Law Centre. The Cook government is trying to create some of the most restrictive anti-process laws in the country. These two proposed laws represent an attack on the right to protest and are a significant overreach into fundamental democratic freedoms. Governments should ensure that their laws facilitate human rights and are consistent with the constitutional bounds of the implied freedom of political communication. Given the risk that both bills impermissibly burden the implied freedom and interfere with fundamental freedoms, they should not be passed. Many of the important rights that Western Australians enjoy today were won through protest, including First Nations land rights, environmental rights, women's right to vote, and marriage equality. Taken together, the practical effect of the provisions in the Land Forces Bill is that people wishing to peacefully express their views are likely to be deterred from attending any peaceful public assembly in or around the convention centre during the Land Forces event period. This chilling effect and the potential for the vast powers to be mistakenly applied represents a significant burden on the freedom of political communication and the right to peaceful assembly and freedom of expression. So I thought I'd read that out. It's quite a dreadful thing, really, all these laws that are happening, and it's really important that activist groups and indeed the community needs to really look at fighting against that and resisting it. So I thought I'd read out that media release. I will be going into some announcements now and also doing some music as well.
Do you like parties?
Yeah.
We can invite all our friends and have soda and pie.
Yeah!
I hope no bad people show up.
Lordy dawdy, we likes to party. We don't cause trouble, we don't bother nobody. We're lordy dawdy, we likes to party. We don't cause trouble, we don't bother nobody.
The Vibe Consultant is hosting a party. We're raising money to keep 3CR pumping through the airwaves, with performances from The Steppers, LXRP and Supermassive River Band. This is gonna be a rager. And the best part, it's only $5 entry. Make sure you're at the Old Bar on Sunday, the 13th of September from 3 p.m.
I would like us to think of this meeting as a serious party.
Be there or be square.
Peace out.
The People's Record is a podcast that looks at race, policing, and public housing. Over 5 episodes, we speak with residents, lawyers, academics, and activists about how policing has evolved and public housing communities are targeted. Listen to us on 3CR in August.
We'll be right back.
Just in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Doing Time Show, 3CR Community Radio. So yeah, that was a song by, first of all, we played a couple of announcements, and then we played Southeast Desert Metal, and the song is called Eagle. And in fact, I played it twice because I think I accidentally did an edited version, and I really felt that listeners needed to hear this whole song in full. Southeast Desert Metal is an amazing Aboriginal band from Arnhem Land, and I absolutely love them. And when they came out to Melbourne, I went to see them in Ballarat, and I also went to see them in Collingwood as well. And that was many years ago, and I'm actually going to contact them to see if they'll come back again. So anyway, that was that. And then beautiful Aboriginal musician called Alice Skye, and she played a song called Grand Ideas. So thank you to everybody that came onto the show today. Thank you to David. David Glantz was last week, I think, from the Refugee Action Collective. Thank you to Ian Rintel from the Refugee Action Coalition, who spoke about the plight of refugees and asylum seekers on Nauru and how they're getting really sick now because they're being starved effectively. And it's quite disgusting, this offshore process that's happening. Also, thank you to Brett Collins from Justice Action. And, yeah, thank you to Brett for talking about computers in cells and always making sure that prisoners are defended. Really, really important. And don't forget, listeners, to attend the Unite Against Racism events that are coming up, organised by the Refugee Action Collective. It's really important. There's actually a One Nation Unite Against Racism event that's happening in September. Go onto the website for the Refugee Action Collective and check it out. Also, rock up to the Rock Against Racism on Sunday at Camp Sovereignty. Really important to do that. And, you know, that's starting from 2 till 8. And I'm going to be going out now pretty soon with our theme song, Black Fellow, White Fellow by the Rumpy Band. And stay safe, everybody, and look after each other. And, yeah, try to rock up to those Refugee Action Collective events in September. Really important to stay strong and, you know, look at getting rid of some of these draconian policies of governments. Okay, stay safe. Stay tuned every Monday for the Do and Time Show, 4 to 5 p.m. And it's goodbye from Marissa. Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.